everyone. Welcome to another episode of Events with Benefits, a podcast designed to help nonprofit organizations like yours raise more money, get your stress levels down, and achieve greater success at your fundraising events. Now, my name is Danny Hooper. I'm the co-host here, along with my good friends Ian Loft from Winspire and Renee Zhao from Donation Match. I'm a professional fundraising auctioneer, and we're down here, as always, coming to you from the world headquarters of Winspire in sunny Southern California. Now, today's guest was an interesting one, or is an interesting one. We're talking to Michelle Boyer, and Michelle's company is called Charity Compliance Solutions. And I was it was amazing to discover and learn the trouble that nonprofit organizations can inadvertently get themselves into by not registering with their state. And as soon as we start soliciting funds and soliciting donations from out of state, some of the trouble that and hot water that people can find themselves in.
Yes, as with any state regulatory committee or body or organization, you're dealing with bureaucracy. So there's going to be rules going back decades that you need to comply with. And some states are more strict than others. So it's really important to make sure that you are well-versed and have a good understanding of what you are getting yourself into before you start soliciting donations from people, especially if you're doing it across the country.
Yeah, and Michelle does make a good point that these are donations that are not necessarily just money, but also goods. And thankfully, there were some exceptions, and I think a large part of our audience will be happy to know that they may already be taken care of. But with state regulations, you've got to make sure you know exactly what you're doing, and Michelle helps us a lot with this.
Well, Ian mentioned that some of these regulations go back decades, but the other consideration is these regulations are changing almost hourly, it seems. And if you're listening to the podcast today, and if your nonprofit has something as simple as a donate button on your website, you may just want to rethink that. And let's get started right now and get some good information from Michelle Boyer. So, Michelle Boyer, your company is called Charity Compliance Solutions, and I guess a good place to start is probably to ask you, what is charity compliance?
Charity compliance is mandatory for any nonprofit or charity that is soliciting donations in the United States. There are 41 states that have requirements that if charities are soliciting in those states, they need to be registered there.
So, does this mean then if you are, say, a California-based charity, you've got a website, you have a donate button on your website, and of course anybody can see that if it's on the internet or the web, does that mean they could fall out of compliance with some of these states?
Yes. It's a tricky question, unfortunately, because it's a gray area. But a few years back, there was a lot of the attorney generals got together and had a meeting regarding the subject of internet and the donate here button. And it's something called the Charleston Principles is what they came up with. And basically, what it outlines is the criteria that states can adopt regarding a donate here button on their website. And it's if they're getting a considerable amount of money from a state, or if they're located in that state, they should be registered. But there are 12 states that do not follow that, and one is Florida, Georgia. They say if you have a donate here button, that is considered active solicitation.
And what are the consequences? Can they throw you in? Does anybody go to jail in this? In this situation, nobody wants to go to jail.
I don't think anyone would go to jail, but there are some repercussions. There are fines. I mean, they can get pretty hefty into the thousands. They can get voluntary compliance agreements that they have to sign with the state, and those actually follow you around from state to state saying that you were soliciting without being registered. Some of the worst case scenarios, they can make you give the money back to the donor, or they can ban you from ever soliciting in that state.
Wow. Yeah, that gets pretty serious. So we've talked about the donate buttons. What are some of the other areas or other means that nonprofits might inadvertently find themselves soliciting donations in some of these other states?
Well, a big one is if somebody does give somebody a donation just randomly, you know, they get something in the mail or something, and then when the charity does send them a thank you letter and we appreciate your continued support, that is actually considered solicitation.
Wow.
So if they're thanking a donor, you know, even though they might not be registered in, say, Colorado, and somebody in Colorado gave them money, then they're actively soliciting in Colorado, and they should be registered.
So let's talk about your company, Charity Compliance Solutions. When a nonprofit calls you for advice, where do you start in the process of walking them through all of these various areas of consideration?
Okay. First, we make sure that they have already gone through the process of filing with the IRS and getting their 501c3 or C4 exemption. And we talk with them to see where they are soliciting. If they know, most people know they have a program that will show where all their money's coming from. And we'll take a look at that. And some people will know exactly where they want to register, you know, but we'll take a look at the main states where they're getting money on an ongoing basis. And then we strongly suggest that those are the states that they should definitely be registered in. I mean, ultimately, you want to be registered in a state before you start soliciting. But that's not always the case.
And what is the procedure what do we do to get registered then in these states? What is that procedure?
Okay. Well, once we start, we obtain from you all your founding documents from your 1023 articles, bylaws, your board list, and we input all this information into a program that we've designed, and we do an initial application with the state, and that all those founding documents go with it. And then once everything gets approved, then you are allowed to solicit into that state. But it does renew every single year. It's not a one-time thing.
And it's not automatically renewing. You have to reapply every year. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, you have to send in a renewal every year with your 990.
All right. What are the timelines involved from the time that you make the application and right through until approval?
Okay. Some states are fairly quick. There's about five of them that are online, and those get turned around within probably 72 hours. The rest of the states, I'm going to say probably 3 weeks to a month, and then unfortunately there's some states like Illinois and New Jersey, you're looking at 6 months.
Wow, that's a long timeline there. now, what about, we talk kind of broad strokes here as far as getting registered. What about the evening of an event and some of these nonprofits, say, want to hold a raffle? That's a state licensing issue, or where does that jurisdiction lie?
Raffles are state mandated. Raffle laws are extremely convoluted, and there's a lot of reporting that needs to be done. And because of the accounting factors of it, we don't handle those here. I mean, those are something that the charity has to handle on their own. But that is required in most states, and they're very succinct.
And where would they make that application in their own state for raffle licensing?
For raffle licensing, you're looking at, oh goodness, I have to get back to you on that. I actually have that written down somewhere. But it's usually either Attorney General or the Secretary of State.
All right. What are some of the common mistakes that you see some of your clients in the nonprofit sector, clients or non-clients, making? What are some of the most common mistakes here when it comes to charity compliance?
One of the most common mistakes is a charity, I'm just going to use California, that they're based in California, think they don't need to register anywhere outside of California because all the money's coming into California. That's huge. Or if they're incorporated in a state, they think that's the only place they need to be registered. That is one of the biggest misconceptions that we see.
Any other common mistakes?
You know, a lot of people will do this on their own, and they'll do the initial registrations, and they think that's all they ever have to do. And so they will start getting letters, and a lot of times when people change people that handle this internally, they fall through the cracks. And we've had organizations come on board with us that maybe registered 5 years ago and then never did anything. And unfortunately, late fees do accrue with the states.
All right. Let's talk about emailing for a moment and e-blasts.
Yes.
Any thoughts that you would have there?
That kind of is going to fall. That is active solicitation. And because there are many actually fundraising consultants that are just online fundraisers, and they direct all the email campaigns. You don't know exactly where your money, you know, you don't know what states these are going to, you know, when you send an email. But when money is coming in, you usually know where it's coming from. The best case scenario is you should be registered in all the states, because you do not know where you're actively soliciting. So you should be registered everywhere.
And let's talk about the cost of getting that done. If somebody wants to register in all states, is that a fairly costly endeavor?
Okay. The initial applications and renewals are pretty much about the same. It's based on the gross revenue. And so, let me just give you an exact, I can give you a high and low actually. On the low end, you're looking at about a little over about $1,100 in state fees, onto the high end of $6,400. And that's really based on the gross revenue. I mean, Massachusetts goes anywhere from $35 a year to $2,000 a year. And just simply based on your gross revenue.
So, Michelle, it sounds like, listening to what you're saying about needing to know where your donors come from, that it's really important to not just collect checks and payment information, but really to actually keep good records, obviously regarding where the donors live and probably other information about them. What kind of information should nonprofits be collecting about people who subscribe, even? You know, sometimes all they have is a name and email address. What can they do to make sure they're complying with laws, even if it's just an email solicitation?
I mean, definitely on their website, when people will subscribe to a newsletter or something, they should have asked for the address, you know, of the state where where this is coming from.
I'd like to know how do the state regulators go about enforcing this, and how do they monitor what's going on out there? Like, I guess I'm saying, what are the chances of getting caught here?
Okay. Well, the first reason people get caught is if they get complaints from donors. And they will contact the state if they're getting a lot of telephone calls, if they're getting a lot of direct mail sent to their house. They can contact the regulator in any state and see if they're registered or complain about them. And secondly, donors are becoming really a lot more informed about where they're giving their money. So every state has a searchable database now. So donors can log in and see if somebody is registered there. And if they're not, they can complain to the state and say, you know, such and such charity is soliciting me, and I don't see that they're registered there. The biggest thing to come out in the last year or two, California has actually cracked down the most. They last year, they took it upon themselves to actively search out charities that are out of compliance or are soliciting without being registered, and going after them. And they will go as far as going after their board members.
So there is liability potentially for board members here of nonprofits?
Yes. Yes, there is.
Wow, that's certainly concerning.
Yes.
So what is your best advice then to people in the nonprofit sector out there as far as getting started, if they're not already? I mean, if this is fairly new, which I suspect it's probably, this is going to be news to a lot of nonprofits out there, that they need to be concerned about compliance, charity compliance. What is your best advice to these people, and where do they get started on getting on the track?
Well, first thing, I would definitely take a look at where your money's coming from. And if you are sending any type of direct mail, email blasts, if you're on any platforms of cause marketing, Facebook, I mean, that's, you know, big. Anything like that, that you are visible to a lot of people, strongly suggest you start registering, you know, as soon as possible. And definitely, you know, especially in states where you're getting a continuous amount of donations from. I mean, it's like, I'm going to say, is Alaska going to go after you for a $10 donation? I doubt that, but I can't tell you not to register there. But I mean, you should be. But basically, I would definitely start with the states that you are getting the bulk of your donations from.
Okay.
Because the states do take the approach that, you know, it's better late than never. Ideally, you should be registered before you even start soliciting. But, you know, there are a few states that will make you go back a few years if they think that you have been soliciting.
So what I love some of these, you know, recommendations you're giving, just important things to consider. Would you recommend, I mean, as far as the communications that they're sending out in email and direct mail, are there things that they can do to try to temper those complaints that may come, like offer people an unsubscribe or ask people whether they still want to be receiving communications? Are there things that they can do to ensure their compliance just with their individual donors?
Well, definitely unsubscribe is a big one. You have to have some way for people to stop getting junk emails. If people are sending direct mail, there is a whole list of disclosures that need to be printed directly on your email so the donors can look you up on, in various states, and actually gives the registration numbers for those states. The big push for the states and for all the states is transparency of these charities. Unfortunately, the bad charities are the ones that make all the good charities so have to do all this work. But
so are there,
that's that.
Are there ways, I think I've seen this on some websites or even postcards that I've received personally, are there ways for charities who want to stay in compliance to be able to put certain statements like, you know, if you are not within, you know, these certain states, then this is not a direct solicitation, or, you know, anything that they can do to mitigate while they're still getting this application process finished so that they are in compliance in all the states?
Yeah, if, you know, we have some, like I have some people that are involved in vehicle donation. So, and that, you know, involves a solicitor and things like that. But if they are not, let's say they're not registered in two or three states, and so they will actually put on there, we do not accept vehicles from state X, Y, and Z. So they can do that on their website so people know, you know, and so they will not accept them. So they are not, you know, required to register in, say, Mississippi or something if that was the state. So they can do that. Or they can actually put, you know, we do not accept donations from, you know, Maryland, Massachusetts, and Virginia or something, if they choose not to register there. I want to back up for one second, if you don't mind. There are some stipulations that for states for registrations that charities need to do audits, audited financial statements. And unfortunately, they're very expensive to do. So some charities can't afford it or choose not to. So there are some states a charity cannot get into unless they have an audit.
Interesting. Great. One thing that we always like to talk about here on this podcast, just because it happens at so many events, is, you know, the fundraising tool of raffles. And many nonprofits do it at their events, but there's many more, I feel, that do it outside of their events and hosting an online raffle. What is your opinion as far as compliance and registration for doing an online raffle of, you know, auction items to raise money?
Okay. Well, let's see. I have just a little bit of information. Like I said, there is quite a licensing process in this. You can't just go online and offer and do a raffle. You need to be registered in the state you're doing it, and there actually is reporting after the fact that's due. So it's something you need to really look into before you just do it. You know what I'm saying? You can't just say, okay, today we're going to raffle off a TV and just put it on your website. But you need to be really diligent in looking in the laws in the different states, because some states you can't even do it unless you're actually in that state. So we don't do it. Like I said, we don't do any of the raffle registrations here, so I don't have all the information for you.
Michelle, we've talked about the California crackdown on noncompliance. What do you see trending out there right now in your sandbox in the charity compliance area?
More and more states are taking their registrations online, and which we handle as well. But the thing is with that, that makes everything a little more transparent and can be viewed state to state. And a lot of states will compare, because you have to list board members. They'll compare board members and see how many, if somebody is on multiple boards, and what kind of relationship they have to the charity and to other charities. Because there's, you know, some shady charities that you'll find board members that are on a lot of boards, and they're all related somehow. So it's a lot. It's the big transparency that is the main push for the states, because they want to protect the donors.
Okay, and actually, just to clarify, when you're talking about soliciting donations, you're not just talking about money. You're talking about goods. You're talking about auction donations, everything, right?
Yes, yes. Any kind of in-kind donations, any, you know, like we have stocks and bonds that people, you know, anything like that, anything that is a solicitation would require registration.
Wow. So would this apply, say, if a local, say, in the state of California, a local Rotary Club solicits a donation of, a sailing trip out on the East Coast from an East Coast Rotary? What would happen in this situation? Is this a non-compliance there?
Well, as far as a Rotary Club...
Or any service club or any nonprofit, just using Rotary as an example. Yeah, Yacht Club.
Okay. I'm going to go backwards to the club situation. If any kind of club like that, or a PTA type thing, or a homeowners association, actually, any of those kind of organizations that are membership are exempt from registration.
And why is that?
Because there are only members paying dues into it, and so that is a part, that membership due is the contribution. And that's what's keeping this organization going. So it's not actually a donation just a donation right to them. So that is the reason. And it's the same with hospitals, schools, religious organizations. They're also exempt.
I think I just heard a big sigh of relief from a lot of our listeners. because there are still others that need to know the rest of this answer.
Yeah, there are, you know, there are, this is, oh man, whoops, excuse me. There are exceptions to every rule. You know, there are maybe a few states, like religious, you can be a religious organization, but unless you have a place of worship, you are not exempt.
Okay.
So schools like universities would be exempt, but the university foundations are not exempt.
So it should be a pretty straightforward and quick answer for you to give any nonprofits that contact you at Charity Compliance Solutions then to find out if they are exempt?
Yes. Yeah. We would have to get all the little details, you know, about an organization to let you know where you would need to register if you do fall into any of those exemption categories.
Very good. So how would people contact you then if they want further information?
Okay, well, you can go to our website, www.charitycompliancesolutions.com, or you can call us. I think our toll-free number is 855-400-5855. And we're available. You know, I have a chat button on our website, so if you just need to want to go on the website and ask a quick question, we're there for that. Otherwise, I do answer emails pretty much all day. I mean, because I answer from home, too. So,
Michelle, in the time that we've been sitting here talking to you, we've been browsing your website, and the chat window has popped up no less than two times. So it's a great way to get in touch with you.
And that is actually me. So they made me put my picture on there.
So, Michelle, what two things do you think listeners should take away from today's episode? Anything that you really want to make sure they know? You know, often I think in the regulations and legal considerations realm, it's really a matter of you don't know what you don't know. So what do most of your clients not know before they contact you?
Two things, actually, is the amount of states that do require registration, and then the fact that it does need to be done every single year and renewed every single year. And that is, I think, the first one is the biggest misconception about having to register. And I mean, we've had from brand new charities all the way up to $10 million a year charity, you know, that do not know they have to register. So it's not something that for some reason is really well advertised, I should say. Even some accountants don't even know, so I don't know why.
Great. Well, we appreciate you sharing your knowledge and information with us on today's episode of Events with Benefits. And our special guest has been Michelle Boyer, and the company is called Charity Compliance Solutions. Want to keep your nonprofit out of jail? Well, I don't know if it could be that serious, but you want to keep yourselves out of trouble and certainly don't want to be paying potentially some sizable fines. It's a quick phone call and a quick contact to Charity Compliance Solutions. And once again, Michelle, thanks for joining us here today.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show this week. For show notes, special offers, or to listen to previous episodes, you can visit us at eventswithbenefits.com. Please also consider subscribing to our podcast on iTunes. And if you enjoyed the show, do us a favor and write us a review while you're there. If you have any questions or feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email at hosts@eventswithbenefits.com. We'll see you next time.